Good morning and welcome to the launch of the State of Food Insecurity in the World. The key message is, as you can see, that economic growth is necessary but not sufficient to accelerate reduction of hunger and malnutrition. According to our latest calculations using new data as well as new methodology, a revised methodology, undernourishment in the world is a grave source of concern, with well over 850 million people considered to be undernourished at the present in the present period, and in the developing world alone, and an additional 15 million in the developed world. The good news, if one can call it that, is that MDG 1, the hunger target of MDG 1, is achievable. We have seen with the new calculations that there has been more progress than previously thought, and also that we are within striking distance of reaching the target for 2015. Unfortunately, the slowdown in progress after 2006 has been a cause of concern, and there needs to be redoubled efforts as well as appropriate efforts in order to be able to reach the MDG target by 2015. There have been, to be sure, uneven trends. Over time, progress was higher during the 1990s, and there was progress in the last decade thanks to renewed economic growth in developing countries. Progress by region, however, continues to be a great source of concern. Progress has been mainly high in East and especially in Southeast Asia, as well as in Latin America and the Caribbean. The situation in sub-Saharan Africa is a grave source of concern, and there has also been rather poor progress in West Asia, North Africa, as well as South Asia. These two pie charts give you a sense of hunger by region as it has changed over the last two decades. At the beginning of the 1990s, and compared to our current estimates, there has been, as you know, significant progress in some regions, but not in other regions. These bar charts give you some further indication, and all this can be found in the document, and gives you a sense of how uneven progress has been. Progress in the situation in the early 1990s contrasted with the situation in the present period by region and sub-region. Many of the changes have been due to better data and that improved methodology. And to give you a sense of this, please refer to the red line, where you see how progress has occurred over time, with the number of hungry people being estimated retrospectively to be in the region of about 980 million in the early 1990s, compared to about 852 million in the current period. The implications, however, of the recalculation are captured by the occur or dark or the orange line, which shows you a declining trend, especially in percentage terms, over the last two decades. To be sure, our understanding of food insecurity and especially of gaps in nutrition need to be significantly improved. We need much better data on food losses and household food consumption. A suite of indicators is needed, because rather than reliance on a single indicator of dietary energy, which is the current indicator which is used. It is also important to recognize the limitations of the current indicator, which is based on an assessment of chronic caloric deprivation over three-year averages. It does not capture aspects related to diet quality. It is not meant to capture the impact of short-term price movements, and we have seen significant price spikes in the last half a dozen years, and it does not reflect the welfare costs of high food prices. A number of other challenges remain. I've already highlighted the significance of geography, as well as our limited understanding of other nutrients. Undernourishment, however, remains the single biggest risk factor when it comes to understanding the disease burden in the developing world. And over 30% of the world's population currently suffer micronutrient deficiencies, according to various estimates. I want to emphasize that our hunger estimates are conservative. The indicator captures chronic, not episodic, undernourishment. There is the greater price volatility of the last 5 or 6 years is not captured by averaging out over 1 year, let alone 3 years. Current measure presumes sedentary lifestyle, and so the caloric requirements for a sedentary lifestyle, to be sure, are much less, and needless to say, most poor and hungry people are expected to work hard. Finally, as I said earlier, we have very little understanding of protein as well as micronutrient deficiencies in our current understanding. Just to give you a sense of the implications of the low threshold, which is captured by the lowest line of the three lines here, you can see that if you adopted a higher dietary energy requirement, you would correspondingly have a higher degree of hunger or undernourishment. And the other two lines are for a moderate activity and for intense activity. Similarly, these numbers correspond to the earlier percentages which I showed you on the screen. Let me turn to part two of the document, of the new report. The part two of the new report emphasizes the importance of economic growth. And as you know, we face the current situation suggests a rather bleak prospects, with the chief economist of the IMF predicting no recovery before 2018. Growth is absolutely necessary to reach and it is important to reach and involve the poor in growth, and the composition of growth is especially important. Agricultural growth is especially important to alleviate the circumstances of the poor, many of whom are in the countryside and many of whom are involved in agriculture. It is also important that agricultural and food systems become much more nutrition sensitive. Social protection and other direct interventions are, needless to say, very important. And in general, growth is necessary, but targeted measures are often needed to reach some of the most vulnerable. This graph basically captures the fact that generally, with economic growth and higher incomes, you can expect food consumption to increase, but it does not increase correspondingly because for obvious reasons. Diets also change as incomes rise. We find that the share accounted for by cereals declines, while the share accounted for by fruits, vegetables, and animal-sourced foods tends to increase. Nutrients can improve, but this does not necessarily follow. Purposeful public action is therefore essential to accelerate hunger reduction. As we argued earlier, economic growth is necessary, and it often requires purposeful public action. An environment conducive to pro-poor long-term economic growth is considered essential to reduce poverty and to reduce hunger. Provision of key public goods and services can go a long way. Equitable and improved access to resources for the poor is important. The empowerment of the poor, especially of women, is key. And improved social protection, as emphasized earlier, can often make a huge difference. Thank you very much for your attention.